It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Welcome, everyone, to Behind the Braves, the official podcast of the Atlanta Braves. I'm Ricky Mast, Atlanta Braves Digital Media Content Manager. My co-host, Greg McMichael, of course, Director of Braves Alumni Relations. We're giving him the week off, but fear not, he'll be back with us next week. But in the meantime, we've got a really fun show for you this week. B.B. Abbott, Executive Vice President and Managing Executive of Wasserman Baseball. If you're a longtime Braves fan, you've at least probably heard B.B.'s name. He is, of course, Chipper Jones' longtime agent. He's now Matt Olson's agent. He was Brian McCann's agent. Long list of prominent baseball players and a lot of prominent Braves that BB has represented over the years. So BB was in town for the game tonight and was kind enough to stop by and grace us with some of his time, and really, really fun getting to know him, pick his brain a little bit about being an agent and about how he became an agent in his career. Just a really good time with him. So without further ado, let's get right into it. Here he is, BB Abbott. Well, BB, thanks so much for taking the time and for sneaking into my, maybe I'll just call this the studio. I won't even call it my office anymore. This is now the studio for Behind the Braves. So thanks for coming up.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
It's very substantial.
Yeah. Hey, I tried to set it up like you'd see a, you know, TV show on ESPN or something, all the bobbleheads,
the books.
I got Chipper's book back there.
I see that.
All right, well, let's start from the beginning. How did you first, I know, having read up on you, Chipper, of course, has talked a lot about you. You guys go, I mean, way back to your childhood friends. But when did you first start getting interested in being an agent? How did that idea first come to you, or what first sparked that interest in you?
Yeah, so I think originally when I was in college and then ended up going to law school, my thought was to get in or break into baseball on the team side. I got a couple of offers out of law school in marketing and some other divisions in the baseball departments, and my dad said, no, I didn't send you to law school to go do that. So you're going to have to go get a real job. And so I did. I went and practiced law for about 5 years with a firm by the name of Foley and Lardner. They represented Major League Baseball at the time out of Milwaukee. It was C-League's attorneys. And so when he became commissioner, they started representing him and Major League Baseball. And so I started working for Foley for about 5 years. Chipper and I obviously were very close from growing up, and he was going through his divorce at the time. And his marketing agents were Payne Stewart's agents, and they passed away in that plane accident where the cabin lost pressurization, and they ended up dying. And so he asked me to come on and handle a lot of his marketing stuff, and was going through the divorce and knew I was a lawyer and, you know, just wanted really to focus on baseball at that point. And he asked me to come on and help navigate that stuff. So I did. And the following year, I ended up taking over everything for him contract wise. And that was the year he won the MVP and we were off.
So you kind of answered my next question. I don't guess there is a formal process for, okay, like I'm going into college, I want to be an agent. It is this. There's not a formal process, right? I mean, I guess is going into studying law maybe the most preferred path, and then you kind of try to network your way from there, or is there's just no two paths alike, you think?
Yeah, so there's several different paths. I don't think that there's one at all. I think that my law degree helps me every day in what I do, from a contract standpoint, from a negotiation standpoint. The experiences that I had as a litigation attorney and arbitration and mediation and things like that certainly helped me, but it's not necessary. I mean, there's a lot of very good agents that do not have a law degree, and they do just fine. So there's not one path to actually come into being an agent, but it certainly helps me, and I couldn't imagine doing this without having a law degree and having that experience of being a lawyer.
So you start taking everything over for Chipper. He wins MVP in 99. So then how does your business start to grow then? I assume other players are seeing the trust that Chipper, who's especially at that point, as big a name as there was in the game, the trust he placed in you and the faith he had in you, did that kind of help start to open the doors to expanding just beyond Chipper?
It did. I mean, I knew that I wanted to grow my practice. I knew that I wanted to grow the firm. I didn't really know at that time how I wanted to do it. I mean, it was 1999. I was in my 20s and faced with, you know, negotiating a very big contract with two Hall of Famers and John Schirrholtz and Stan Kasten. And, I was really ultra focused on that at the time. And then at the same, you know, when I was clear with that, I knew that, okay, it's time to get to work and how am I going to build this thing? And so I started, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how I was going to build it. You know, I really wanted to be quality over quantity. I started to recruit some kids out of South Georgia and some in Florida, but mostly South Georgia because that's Braves country. And I knew that I would have at least a foot in the door. That contract certainly allowed me to have a foot in the door, and having Chipper as a client certainly had gave me that opportunity. Without that, I would not be sitting here today. I mean, there's no doubt. I tell Chipper that all the time, he reminds me of that all the time. So without that, I wouldn't have had that opportunity. So for 2 years, I represented a couple kids out of South Georgia, a couple kids out of Florida, just to kind of get my feet wet, to try to get involved with the draft, to try to get to know some of the area guys, which led to getting to know some of the regional cross checkers, which led to getting to know some of the scouting directors and then ultimately the general managers, because, you know, at that point I didn't have any experience in baseball. I attached myself to as many area scouts, which were younger guys like myself, as well as assistant coaches at colleges. Brian Peters was a guy that he was at USF, University of South Florida at the time. And I was literally in his pocket everywhere he went. Hey, who's that? Who's this? You know, who's that scout? And just trying to get to know everybody. Because, you know, I did it backwards, right? I negotiated this very large contract for probably the biggest client that I'll ever have. Hopefully not, but, you know, I mean, as of right now, probably the biggest and most famous client that I've ever had. And then I was forced with, okay, now you go build a company. So it gave me that foot in the door. I think it gave me some credibility, but it was still hard. It took me a couple of years to really make an impact. And 2001 was really the first year that I got the opportunity to represent some players, you know, that were highly rated type of players. Jeff Mathis being one of them, who he's actually going to the game with me tonight. And, you know, recently retired and had a great career. McKay McBride, who was the Braves draft pick in 2001, was the next. And in 2002 was Jonathan Broxton, and ultimately led to Brian McCann. And we were off. But it took a couple of years, you know, to get there. And it was hard. But again, without that contract, without Chipper bringing me in to do that, this would not have been possible.
Well, and it always, I tell people this too, when they ask about working in baseball, it starts with some connection like that somewhere. I mean, some folks are able to come out of school and they're qualified and they get the right interview at the right time. But for me, I mean, I feel like I had the skills to do what I do and to work in baseball, but it still took making a meaningful connection along the way. And even beyond that, it was still a couple years before connection and opportunity finally came together at a time where, you know, it was ripe. It was ready for me. And so I think it's a story for a lot of people that work in the game.
Stan Kasten has the best story of all.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you know it or not, but he met Ted Turner. I think his father gave him as a gift in graduating from law school a trip to, I think, all 30 stadiums. And he ended up meeting Ted in the stands and then ultimately became, you know, the general counsel at 20 something years old for several different, you know, organizations at the pro level. So, yeah, I think you have to make your own opportunity, but at the same time, you have to be fortunate. And I'm extremely fortunate to having grown up next to a Hall of Famer.
Well, it's like a small little world, this baseball world, because I just met Jeff and Tyler, Pastor Nikki out there, who's with you now. So I met Tyler once before, and it was on the Braves Country Caravan in January of 2013, when I was just, long story short, I had done this thing for Major League Baseball the year before. I've always been a Braves fan. It got me a little bit of attention, made some connections with the Braves. So they invited me down to kind of do some social media stuff and fun stuff on this caravan for 2 weeks. And Tyler was on the the bus one of those days, and he was quite a character. I still remember it. Very funny, and sat next to me actually for one of our jaunts up the road, and I really enjoyed getting to be around him. But it was on that same bus trip that I met somebody who, at the time, it was her first day with the Braves as an intern, what we call trainee, and she and I kept in touch. And 2 years later, she reached out to me and said, hey, I think there's a job here that would be perfect for you. And it was just from that one bus trip and just making a connection and being nice, and it all came full circle. So
listen, I mean, you never know who you're going to meet at what particular time you're going to meet them. And I think that's a good lesson, right, for everybody, especially young people, because you don't know. You never know. You never know when that person might come back into your life. Tyler, I've known since high school, and, you know, he was a starting shortstop for the Atlanta Braves. I mean, I always give him a hard time because his claim to fame was he beat out Andrelton Simmons. I always ask him how his career is going now. Right. And, you know, so I knew him, and he was represented by another agent in Tampa. And I just stayed in touch with him. I'd see him out and about. And as we were growing our company at the time, he became an alternative, you know, for us. And he is a tremendous agent. He knows the game. We're sitting at these tables, and every family he talks to, every kid that he talks to, he's gone through, you know, those things. So, you know, I'm fortunate to have those relationships that I keep going for a reason, right? If I'm around people that I think are talented, or I think that I'm around people that I think, you know, might someday be able to fit something for me, I keep them close and I keep in contact with them.
You mentioned sitting, when you're sitting, you or Tyler, or whoever's working for you, you're sitting at these kids' tables and these families' tables. What are the important things when you go into those situations? What are the important things that you and your staff are always keen on remembering? What, and beyond that, I would imagine, is there a difference between, say, when you're going to talk to a high school kid and his family and a kid coming out of college? I mean, what is that process like?
Sure, absolutely. I think that there is a big difference. You know, with college kids, sometimes it's on their own. Sometimes they want mom and dad to just kind of put a stamp of approval on it. They kind of handled their own stuff. Maybe they've been through it already out of high school. But, you know, they're becoming their own men, you know, at that time. And they want to make, you know, they want to make that call by themselves and make sure that mom and dad are okay with it. Sometimes the parents are more involved in the process, but it's much more business oriented at that point. They understand pro baseball. They've been through 2-3 years of college, so they understand, you know, what it takes, the work that it takes, and they're becoming men, you know, right in front of their parents' eyes. And I think that they get a little bit more leeway to make those types of decisions for themselves. In high school, it's much different. You know, I think that mom and dad are looking for somebody to take care of their kids. They know that they're a long way from the big leagues, and they know that they have a long, very rocky road ahead of them, and they're getting ready to likely work for the first time in their life for a living. And so it's a much different type of recruiting, but at the end of the day, it's the same, right? They have to feel that personal connection to you. There's a lot of good agents out there that can do a good job for players and for families. But at the end of the day, that relationship is something that's extremely important. And I think that whether it's out of college or whether it's out of high school, that's truly what, you know, the families are looking for, and what the kids are looking for is to be extremely comfortable that when you speak for them outside of their presence, that it reflects what they're looking to accomplish.
Absolutely. I grew up in the world of NASCAR. Dad was a race car driver, and I felt like sort of through osmosis, I got to see and be around what it was like and start to develop a sense of people that were there for the right intentions or kind of in around you, and then some that were trying to capitalize. And then really in some unfortunate situations, you know, watching my dad learn the hard way that, like, this person was not here for the right reasons. Right. And those are lessons I've carried with me. So even to me, who's not an athlete, I think that speaks to me with what you're saying, is that the way you put it is they know that when you're speaking on their behalf, that you're representing them and their best interests and how they want to be represented, which is great.
You kind of got a NASCAR driver's name. Ricky Mast.
Yeah. Well, that is a NASCAR driver's name. That's it my is. Dad's name, Rick Mast. So yeah.
I love
so,
it.
So there you go. That's actually it. That's a picture of me waving the green flag there
that's
with
great.
Him. So
that's great.
You brought up negotiating Chipper's first contract earlier, and I definitely wanted to dive into negotiating with you, or the art of negotiation, because, and I've said this before on this show, Mac and I, when we've talked to Alex, we've had him on a few times, or anybody that's been in the front office, we've had some of the baseball ops guys. I always say that if I could be a fly on the wall in any situation in sports, it would be in the negotiating room with the agent and the GM, because I'm a terrible negotiator. Like, I'm just horrible at it. So I'm fascinated by people who do it and do it well. What are some of the keys? Well, actually, let me back up. How was that first negotiation? I mean, you touched on it, so let's start there. How was that first one for you, and knowing it was a big one?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the first one is not entirely unlike all the ones after that. The components or the concepts are still the same. Some of the language is a little foreign to me on the guarantee language, insurance language, things of that nature. But the actual negotiation part, it wasn't a lot different than, you know, what I would encounter today or what I would have encountered as a lawyer. Just the stakes were much different. And you have to, you know, really understand what your client wants. Try to understand what it is that the team wants, and then try to see if there's, you know, some sort of convergence of those two paths. And for Chipper, it was extremely important for him to be the highest paid baseball player ever, even if it was only for 5 minutes. That's something that he thought that he had earned. And that became our focus, you know, to make sure that it was structured in a way that accomplished that goal, but also was accomplished or something that we were, was extremely important for us to accomplish, was, you know, that we thought that he would be in a Braves uniform. And that's something that was true throughout his career, that happened in every negotiation, whether it was with John or with Frank or, you know, whoever, Alex, whoever it was, you know, in the future, you know, that was always the underlying theme, as Chipper wanted to wear one uniform his entire career. And we were able to accomplish that. And I think that was the first time that, you know, I really decided, you know, to myself that this is not about me. This is about him. This is what he wants. This is not about going and getting the very most money, because that was not what was important to him. He could have gone to free agency and got more money multiple times throughout his career. But I think that what we did was we tried to get as much money as we could out of a place, and to try to retain leverage. And I think we did a pretty good job, you know, with him. And at the end of the day, whether he left $20, $30, $40 million on the table, that was insignificant to him. The thing that was important to him was to stay in that Braves uniform, and obviously we accomplished that. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters, is your players happy.
Yeah, and speaking as a lifelong Braves fan, not just as a guy who works for the Braves now, who grew up watching and loving Chipper, that was one of those things, or that was one of the biggest things, I would say, beyond his play on the field, which spoke for itself, that I felt like endeared him to, well, Braves country, was that he wanted to be a Brave, and he made it. I mean, I can't imagine what it must have felt like when he said, well, you know what, I'm going to renegotiate my contract so that the team has more money. Like, I'll take less so that as an agent, I can't imagine that's music to your ears. But at the same time, legacy wise and importance to, I mean, that endeared him that much more to Braves fans. And we will always love him for those reasons.
Yeah. It's funny because all of those different GMs that I dealt with the Braves, you know, all had different styles. But at the end of the day, again, they had one objective: keep this guy in Atlanta, keep him part of Braves country, you know, do not let him get away. And so I think that there was a recognition on both of our parts, right, that we had something that we needed to work together to try to make happen, and to try to, you know, put these pieces together of, okay, he needs to be paid enough, you know, where he's market value, and the Braves needed to pay him enough to where it worked within their budget. Okay, let's find a solution. And no matter who the GM was, whether it was, you know, Copy or Frank or John or Alex, you know, that was always the underlying theme. And I give those guys all credit because, you know, we ultimately got us into a place to where that was accomplished.
After his appearance in the booth the other week, do you think you're going to have to start negotiating his full-time broadcasting? I know he did it for ESPN for a little bit, but yeah. That broadcast the other week was... I feel like you were sitting there smiling just as much as the rest of us were.
You know what? He could have had a job doing this right over the last couple of years. He is having a hard time not touching the guys, not being able to work with guys in cages and talk hitting and those things. You know, it was a little unfair because when he did it with ESPN, it was during COVID, so yeah, he was remote. He never really gave it a good run, you know, at trying to do the broadcasting thing. He'd be extremely good at it. He's, you know, he's very insightful. He gets the rhythm of the game, much like Smoltz does, and Frenchie. You know, Glav does a great job. And so, you know, he would be extremely good at it. It's just, you know, I think that he is not ready yet to not put on some form of a uniform and get out there and evidently take balls off the arm and whatnot right. when he's shagging balls in BP.
Right. It's nice even now when I go out for BP, and it's just kind of a nice, familiar, comfortable feeling to see number 10 just walking yeah. around out there during BP. So it's great.
When he took that ball off the arm not too long ago, I said, why don't you just stop doing yeah. that? Well, just stop. It's time. And he said, well, that's the only exercise I get. And I said, well, you better go get on a treadmill.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up this quick topic. I was just pitching to some of my fellow colleagues here in marketing the other day that I feel like we need to put some seats on top of the Chop House, mm-hmm. and we need to brand that with something Matt Olson related, and we need to just have a Matt Olson fan section, because I've been here since this ballpark opened and been at almost every game in the press box, and people don't just hit home runs up there, and Matt has put a couple up there now. Yeah. So what's that been like, bringing Matt back to Atlanta and quickly getting that deal done, which that had to have been? I was in spring training when that happened. I was in the room for the press conference on the field when we got the news the trade was going to happen the day before. I mean, coming out of the lockout, that was, just from my side, that was a crazy 24 hours. I can't imagine what that was like for you. What was that like for you in representing Matt?
It was funny. You mentioned Alex earlier and having talked to him. A camera crew should have been on him during that 48 hours, because it was a master class. He was extremely focused. You know, he knew that he wasn't going to sleep. He knew the significance of the person that was leaving the organization in Freddie. He understood the gravity of the situation, and he knew that if he made the move that he was going to make, that he was going to be closing a very big door, I think, but opening potentially another door. And so he was very uber focused on getting Matt done. And you know, that with Alex was different than any other negotiation, because it was so hurried. Right? And again, you figure out what the motivations of the person is that you're negotiating against. You know the motivations of your client, which is an Atlanta boy coming from Oakland. And man, he would love to be here. And he and his wife, Nicole, would love to be here the rest of their career. And you know, you take that information, you go, okay, let's see if we can get it done. And it happened extremely quick. There was not the pomp and circumstance that goes back and forth in some of these negotiations. It was a very honest conversation. And I think, you know, quite frankly, that if Alex and I had not had the relationship that we had, it likely would not have got done in such a quick period of time. But there was a mutual trust, you know, having dealt with Chipper, with Chipper continuing on with the team, you know, and having that relationship with him in the draft. Charlie Morton, you know, was another very big part of that in the relationship that we were able to form with Charlie, and just really talking no nonsense. And that at that moment, the key for me was to know, all right, I need to work with Alex. I cannot work against him. He's been through a very hard time, a very hard negotiation, and very emotional about, you know, ultimately seeing Freddie go somewhere else. And I need to work with him, and we need to get this done. And we did. And again, I give him credit, because he was able to focus on what he needed to do while at the same time being extremely emotional about one of the most popular players that has ever put on a uniform here.
All right. So last question. I know that working in baseball, even in my much less prestigious role than yours, that no 2 days are alike. I mean, the first pitch time is always the same, but no 2 days are alike. But still, if somebody were to ask me about working the game, and they'll ask, what is a typical day like for you? I'll try to compile together a sort of what a typical day is like for me. I got to imagine that's even more extreme for you. But if somebody were to ask you, what is a typical work day like for you? What does that look like? I mean, is it making sure you're checking in with X amount of clients today? I mean, what is a typical day like for you?
Yeah, to tie up your last, you know, question in regards to Alex and Matt, and the reason I'm saying this, because I flew into town, I knew that I wanted to come up and with another one of our agents, Al Getz, who recruited Matt, and at the time out of high school at a Parkview, and so we went to lunch. So let me take a step back for a second and tell you that a huge part of that negotiation was Matt Olson, right? And the type of human being that he is, and now that everybody sees the type of human being that he is, it made my job extremely easy, because Alex did his research when he was making that trade. He knew the type of person that he was getting. He knew the enormous nature of what was going to happen for Matt to come in and try to, you know, not fill those shoes. And Matt helped, you know, Matt handled that question in the initial press conference. He handled it extremely well when they asked him about filling Freddie's shoes. And he wasn't there to fill Freddie's shoes. He was there to be Matt Olson. And, you know, the negotiation is, and there was a perfect way to answer, because Matt Olson is Matt Olson. And I think that Braves country has seen that now. So that made that negotiation extremely easy to do when you're representing somebody like that. So I flew in, went to lunch with Nicole and Matt, handled a bunch of calls. We had a kid that, or a player that we've represented for since 2000 and 2012. He just got DFA'd, and he's a longtime big leaguer. Had to deal with that today, this afternoon. Talked with some other agents that we have in our company that that are recruiting guys. So talked a little bit about that. Talked a little bit with our guys that put together some of our recruiting packages. At this point, they would tell you that I've been kind of put out to pasture, all of our younger agents. But I'm still tell them that I'm a good delegator, and I kind of sit above and just watch everything from the 10,000 foot view. But my average day really just depends on the type of day it is and the time of year it is. So now, you know, in the summer, before it was all about recruiting, it was all about, you know, getting ready for the draft, which is coming up, you know, here in less than a month. And we'll have a tremendous draft this year. And kudos and shout out to all of, you know, our agents at Wasserman putting together the type of draft class that we're going to have. And so a lot of it's going to be centered around that, handling calls in regards to the combine, really uber focused on the guys getting into the combine and then ultimately coming out and being ready for the draft. And then, you know, recruiting at the same time. So, you know, we're recruiting 2 and 3 classes away from the draft this year. So this is the 2023 class, right? So we're recruiting the 24 and the 25s and the 26s even. And so those are always going on, and that happens throughout the summer through August. And then it really, I flip the switch, so to speak, or flip the page, and it becomes really the off season. You know, at that point, as we get into playoffs, and I'm seeing clients as they're in the playoffs, and then we get into the off season, and then you flip it again, and it really goes to negotiation and arbitration work and free agency, and then try to get a little personal time in there, and always try to take a vacation right around October, November, December, depending on who's in the playoffs, and then the calendar flips, and it becomes something completely different. It's getting ready for an actual arbitration if you're going to hearing. It's, you know, handling and making sure the guys are getting ready for spring training, you know, at that point. But they are correct in that before, you know, when we were operating as Jet Sports Management, and I was really handling a lot of that stuff myself, it was a lot more hectic. And now, you know, since Wasserman has acquired us, and that's going extremely well, and we've done a good job of hiring very competent people that, you know, they're very, very good at their job. They're people that I could not live without at this point. They'll all be calling me for raises now. But, you know, that they allow me to, you know, really see things from that view. And so it's changed for me over the last 20 years to be able to go from making sure that a guy had their equipment order, right, which I don't have to worry about now, to now worrying to making sure that, you know, they're just okay. How are you doing? You know, and we get to talk about those types of things, personal things, and I can really focus on being an agent, which I miss some of those times, honestly, because you get to know those guys. You know, if their bats aren't good and they're having a hard time and they want to explore another cleat or whatever the case might be, I mean, those were the days, you know, back in the early 2000s. And now I'm really just worried about making sure that everybody in our company is in a good place and happy, and making sure that all of our guys are ultimately happy. But I do not have to micromanage the people that work with me at all. They're extremely good at what they do.
That's awesome. Well, I'm so fascinated by what you do, so I could sit here and pick your brain all day, but I want to let you get out there and enjoy the game with your crew. So BB, thanks so much for taking the time, man.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. I appreciate it.